Blog Talk Radio.
So much media, so little time. Who keeps track of it all? That would be me. This is Bob Andelman, and this is a Mr. Media interview, sponsored today by the audiobook edition of Will Eisner's Spirited Life, now available in iTunes and Audible.com, and recorded live on blogtalkradio.com from the new Media and American League Baseball capital of the world, St. Petersburg, Florida. If you read the comics in your daily newspaper, my guest today has probably touched your life. Spider-Man, Hagar the Horrible, and Curtis all report to him at his day job as comics editor for King Features Syndicate. But by night, and weekends no doubt, and late night weekends, Brendan Burford is himself a cartoonist dedicated to the notion that comics are more than a 10-second entertainment. He believes in them as journalism, a different way of communicating the events of the day. Burford recently published his fourth edition of Syncopated, an anthology of nonfiction picto essays. It's a collection of illustrated stories that, at a few pages each, are longer than daily comics and shorter than a graphic novel. This latest edition of Syncopated includes work by Burford himself, as well as graphic artists including Nick Bertozzi, Josh Neufeld, and many others. If you're interested in expanding your comics horizon, you'll enjoy reading Syncopated. Brendan, hopefully here. Let's see. Brendan, welcome to Mr. Media.
Hello, Bob. Thank you for having me.
good to have you here. Syncopated, is that even a word?
Yes, it is. It's a word.
How did you happen upon that?
I've addressed this a couple of times in introductions to the past volumes of Syncopated. It's a musical term, and it literally means a stressing of the weak beat, and I thought it was appropriate because I'm very fond of old music and old jazz music in particular, and that's a commonly employed attribute of 1920s, 30s jazz music is this idea of syncopation. But I also thought it was appropriate because I like the idea of stories that kind of reveal perhaps unnoticed or stories that are told by someone through a perspective that may not have been told before. And I think the stories in Syncopated, the books, do just that. They're all nonfiction. They offer people a glimpse of a profile of a person or some sort of a history or some sort of just, general essay on a subject. And there's an appropriate sort of link there. And a quick correction. I noticed you said that I published the fourth volume here. I had been self-publishing these books. I think the first three, and then this newest one was published by Random House. So I'm no longer playing self-publisher.
Wasn't really implying that it was self-published. Just that
I see.
You put it together and got it out there, but
yes.
Okay.
Okay, fair enough.
I appreciate the difference. Mm-hmm. Let me ask you about that. Why the switch? Why not continue putting them out yourself? Was just opportunity knocked?
Yeah, they approached me about it, and I hadn't thought about trying to find a publisher. I didn't necessarily assume that anybody would do the job or want to do the job necessarily.
Mm-hmm.
I'm glad I self-published because I learned a lot about different aspects of the whole, making of books from distribution and dealing with printers and just every aspect of getting a book together, putting it out, and then trying to put it into stores. And as I said, I'm glad I got to learn that, but I'm also glad I no longer have to do that. It's tiresome and thankless. And certainly Random House and Villard, which is the imprint that published this volume of Syncopated, they're doing a much, much better job than I could ever possibly do. It's amazing the amount of publicity they've been able to garner for it, the reach of the distribution is really thrilling.
It is nice to be able to hand off the responsibilities beyond creating to someone else, isn't it?
Yes, absolutely.
And you know, I asked you about syncopated as a term, but tell us about the picto essays. I mean, it sounds like something that was sold in the 1920s with stereo vision glasses.
I don't know. Maybe it's a little tongue in cheek. Maybe it's just a way to come up with a sort of highfalutin subtitle for the book. You know, if it just says syncopated on the title and you're staring at the book rack, and you might not quite get it. And I figured just a little bit of extra information on what might be inside this book that you're looking at would be helpful. So I decided to do that. And I'm not, you know, taking credit for inventing this phrase or anything. I think that, you know, there's plenty of people who are taking, you know, comics and trying to give them a new level of sophistication for their definition of it. And I don't mean that to sound pretentious about it all. It's actually, like I say, a little tongue-in-cheek, the whole thing. I mean, I think one of my favorite examples is in Dan Clowes' Ice Haven, when he refers to comics as, it's like, I think, narroglyphic picto assemblages or something like that. It's hysterical to me. I don't know, that whole notion of you know, we have a strange thing going on here in comics. We have to shed this idea that comics are for kids or comics are, you know, what the general population has kind of collectively decided they are. And little moments of defining them probably go at least some distance in helping change people's minds. Graphic novel, of course, is the big one now that everybody uses. And I've always had a problem with that phrase, but I can't quite articulate why. It just bothers me that it was anointed and no one really seems to discuss this, you know.
But, you know, it's interesting. A lot of people talk about the first or the best-known graphic novel being Will Eisner's Contract with God, but it was actually a series of short stories, any one of which probably could have fit into Syncopated in some way. Just, I mean, you know, they're not. It wasn't a long novel. It was just a series of stories.
Right.
And I wanted to ask you. You've got two contributions in this collection, and I wanted to ask you about Boris Rose, Prisoner of Jazz. It's a very interesting story. I'm wondering why it fits this. And I'll tell you that I'm asking this a little rhetorically, but why it fits this format, the picto essay, as opposed to someone just writing a story about Boris for the Daily News and, you know, going on.
Well, I mean, in general, comics kind of give us that synesthetic experience, you know. I mean, that idea of you're being told a story, but you're also giving some visual information on the world that you're trying to depict. And Jim Campbell did the artwork for that story. I just wrote it. And Jim Campbell, by the way, I believe is one of the great talents of our time, and people should pay attention to what he's doing. He was able to take a representation. I mean, it's amazing. The caricature of Boris Rose in that story by Jim is uncanny. It's fantastically accurate. I think that we have an opportunity to tell stories with words and pictures the same way, you know, it's the same reason we read comics of any sort, you know. It's information. Yes, of course, a piece could have been written about Boris Rose. I think there's this guy who I actually interviewed for the story. He knew Boris. He was very close to him, and he had spent some time with him just taking notes through interviews. This guy's name is Art Zimmerman. He's a record collector, and he got to know Boris toward the end of Boris's life. And I believe he was planning to, and maybe he'll still follow through with writing sort of the definitive biography of this guy, because, I mean, I scratched the surface. I just kind of told a sort of, you know, a little primer for anybody interested in this man's life. There's really not much else to dig at this point, but there's certainly more story to tell.
Well, I was going to say, it's very interesting. And the reason I said it was rhetorical, my question about why doing it in this format, people haven't seen this. It's fascinating to see Boris is this guy who became obsessed with recording live music, and then he also sold illegal bootlegs of said music. But over time, it became such an obsessive collection of music that he actually had incredibly rare stuff, and you see that visualized here by Jim. And it's amazing to see. And it's a true story. That's the thing that will surprise people. This is a true story, and
it's
having come from,
it's as true as you know, the people I spoke to, including his own daughter, relayed to me. Mm. So I'm sorry.
No. I was going to say that coming from growing up in New Jersey and around comics and collectibles, really all through my teens and early 20s, I knew a lot of people who had some very obsessive hobbies, passions. And so it wouldn't surprise me at all to find out that there were, you know, 10 or 12 Boris Roses out there.
Oh, sure.
Because something propels these people. It, you know, it's really good. Now, what are some of the other stories in there? If you could pick out, you know, one or two to describe for people who have not seen the book that you feel are equally compelling and capture this genre that you're working through.
I think everything in there is absolutely worthy of being in there. There's some really wonderful stories in there, and at the risk of playing favorites, I think that there are some very successful ones that approach the idea of just a nonfiction essay in the form of comics in their kind of particular corner of that larger notion. Nick Bertozzi's How and Why to Bale Hay is fantastic. I mean, someone told me they read it and cried. And I guess I can kind of understand that. There's just this I don't know, there's this beauty to it. Rena Piccolo's story about postcards and old postcards and kind of what they've meant and where they've come from, where they've gone, and the idea of you know, I think the title she chose for is Perfect Penny Sentiments. And then the more serious kind of you know, reportage, like Greg Cook's piece about Guantanamo, or Nate Powell's piece about the 1921 Tulsa race riots. I mean, they're soberingly stark, but they all fit. There's this thread that I think if you read the book from beginning to end, there's this thread that these things all fit together. They're accomplishing the idea of being comics that relay true stories, but they don't feel disjointed from one another necessarily. There's so many other ones on Paul Karasik's piece about Eric Erickson is great. I'm actually really fond of the two in there that aren't really comics necessarily. They're more portfolio pieces, but they tell the story through pictures. Trish Vandenberg had done a series of drawings on Washington Square Park here in New York as it was changing during a controversial construction project. And Victor Curlow had done an essay on the subway buskers of New York City. And, I mean, they're beautiful illustrations. They've got great energy and, you know, they're unhinged, but at the same time completely anchored. I mean, Alex Holden's story is great. I might be forgetting a couple here. There's like 15 stories in there, I think. And they're all solid and they fit together nicely, I believe.
Now, how often will there be a syncopated collection now that it's switched over to Random House?
I don't know. It was always irregularly published when I was doing it, and we haven't spoken about if or when we would do the next one, but, you know, we'll see. I mean, hopefully if we do another one, it won't be so long that it's somehow fallen out of everyone's consciousness, you know.
Mm. And do you do you go out and seek the contributions from people, or at this point, after four of these, are they coming to you saying, hey, look what I've got?
No, there's never been a case where it's a story that I didn't personally ask the cartoonist to do. I've always gone to them, and I think that I choose them based on, you know, what these cartoonists generally do, and just there's kind of a tone, there's an approach, there's an aesthetic that I think these cartoonists share on a sort of on a very, you know, foundational level. They're not like, you know, to the extreme in your face, you know, cartoonists. There's a conversational tone to the way they approach their comics. Some of them don't necessarily have nonfiction under their belt before I ask them to, but you can tell that it's going to make sense, and you could tell that. I mean, first of all, I think you ask anybody to tell you a true story that they know about, a person they know about, a history that they know about, or something. They're going to have a chances are something compelling to share with you. And these cartoonists are they're master storytellers to begin with, and you know, why not ask them to indulge in illustrating one of these stories that they have or know about, or invite them to look deeper into something they only, you know, partially know about.
Well, let's change gears a little bit and talk a little bit about your day job. You are, of course, the comics editor for King Features, which I think to most people sounds like a pretty cool job.
I don't know. I meet people sometimes and they don't really understand what it is. The job, I mean, not King Features.
Oh, okay. Like,
what do you do all day? Are you just reading comics and correcting misspelled words?
That's it, right? Now, no. Tell people, what is it that you do? What do you do all day?
I do a lot of things, and I work with a lot of people. We have a team of editors that handle making sure everything is spelled correctly, and you know, commas are in the right place, and strips are vetted so that you know, you want to make sure that you don't do anything too controversial and save everyone from getting into too much trouble and experiencing too much grief over a joke or something that might somehow rub people the wrong way. And that group of people we have are extremely good at what they do. And usually if there is a problem that's bigger than a misspelled word, they'll call me up and say, hey, what do you want to do here? Do you want to attempt this bizarro cartoon by Dan Ferraro, perhaps rubbing people the wrong way as he talks about, you know, whatever political issue? And, you know, sometimes you push it, sometimes you don't, but I'm charged with the responsibility of making that call for the most part. I work with the marketing and PR department and the sales department, and occasionally the licensing department and book publishing, just to try to, you know, be the coordinator of cartoonists interfacing with all these different, you know, people. I see myself as the cartoonist advocate inside King Features. I think it's my job to make sure that you know, their voice, their chances are they're holed up in their studio at home or elsewhere. And I think that they, from speaking to them, they believe it's just this sort of vacuum that they exist in, and they zip their cartoons off, you know, for email to us and don't necessarily hear much back. And, you know, they need a voice inside the office, and I think I do that. I believe it's my responsibility to do that. I develop new comic strips. There are cartoonists who have been at this, you know, since longer than I've been alive, and I don't ever pretend that they would need my help on deciding how to go about making a more effective comic strip. But there are some of our newer cartoonists who really like that sort of coaching, that sort of hand-holding. My job is to try to understand the differences between one cartoonist and another and what their goals are and what it is about their work that they need to accentuate in order to be successful. So it's, like I say, it's a lot of everything. I imagine if people understand what an editor does, it's exactly that for me, except it's for comic strips.
I've had a number of King comics creators on this show, both as radio interviews the last 3 years and a decade ago when this was a newspaper feature. Back then, Bill Griffith, who does Zippy, was on originally, and I'm trying to think. Mutz.
Patrick
I had
McDonald.
Patrick.
Yeah, I
Patrick
recall
McDonald
that.
McDonald was on
yeah.
last year. Chris Brown. I haven't been able to get Chris Brown to come on as a featured guest, but he's called into a number of shows. Ray Billingsley, who does Curtis, has been on.
Yes.
And I'm wondering, in today's newspaper market, which is, you know, it's a hurting thing, is there an opportunity still to develop new cartoonists for this genre, or are the new cartoonists, are they looking at opportunities like a syncopated, like web comics, and, you know, how has that affected what you do?
I mean, obviously, it's very much a transitional time. Anybody who tells you that they can kind of hold the wheel on the existing business and expect success is, I think, delusional. you know, newspapers are absolutely changing. I don't think they're dying. I think they're changing, and I think that we'll continue to attach ourselves to them because that's where our business has been with them. But we're also going to, you know, pursue new businesses. At our core, we are a company that is supposed to represent cartoonists, be their publicist, be their salesperson, be their editor, and go out there and find where these things would exist that would provide them a living and justify the existence of a company like King Features. I mean, that's sort of like, you know, a vague definition of things, but really that's what it is. And we've been fortunate for decades and decades to be able to sell to this stalwart, the newspaper industry. You know, people expect to see them there. The editors that we call on at these newspapers, you know, expect our salespeople to pay them a visit, you know, selling them the newest thing. It's no longer a, all right, we're going to create this new comic strip with this great cartoonist. We're going to help them refine it from an editorial perspective, build some publicity materials, some sales materials, and go out there, hit the road, and knock on every door and say, hey, do you want this great new comic strip? It's no longer that easy. There's, I think, a little bit more savvy digital marketing that needs to go into it and everything. But to get to the sort of, I think, the thrust of your question here, we plan on sustaining this business. It's just going to have to happen in new in different ways.
And by the way, I need to just add to something I said before. I've also had two more of your strips represented here, Zitz and Baby Blues. Rick Kirkman, Jerry Scott, Jim Borgman have all been on the show also.
Yeah.
Will King develop online-only comics, web comics for the newspapers and for other distribution?
There's nothing specifically planned right now where we have a comic strip that we plan on taking out and not trying to sell to newspapers and exclusively trying to sell through digital means. It may get there through necessity or it may get there accidentally, you know, but right now there isn't plan for any one specific strip to fall into that category.
Are there web comics that you obviously have a broader view of comics than maybe some people, some of your counterparts at other syndicates producing syncopated and being an artist yourself. Are there web comics out there that you're very fond of that you think could be distributed in this form?
Yeah, there are. I'll choose not to name any because then I'll be
poaching.
I'll be charged to follow through with it.
you're going to take the easy way out. All right,
yeah.
Go ahead.
No, it's absolutely there are comics out there. I mean, I'm interested in comics on all levels and all shapes and forms. I live and breathe this stuff, you know, from underground comics to independent comics to the mainstream stuff to newspaper strips, web comics, I mean, personal comics, everything. Just the idea of this medium, this language comics, holds so many possibilities. And sure, I mean, I would love to be able to even change or at least just push those boundaries of the sort of comics that King Features can distribute. And the web offers, there's cartoonists right now doing strips on the web that I would love to work with, and I think that we could find effective outlets for helping them grow who they are and helping King find a new existence for itself among the many other businesses that we do.
Now, the story of how you became the comics editor at King is kind of an unusual and somewhat sad one. Do you mind recalling it for folks who don't know?
Yeah, it's a little bittersweet, you know. I mean, it is a great job, as you mentioned before, but I was appointed to this job when my old boss, my predecessor, the guy who held this before me, passed away in a drowning accident. And I'd worked with Jay Kennedy for 7 years, and he was kind of my mentor. And, you know, he showed me the ropes at King, and I learned a lot about being an editor from him. He and I were very close outside of work, too. He was a big underground comics collector, as am I. And we worked together on cataloging his collection for this reference book that he had published years ago and was hoping to publish a new edition of. So I mean, we were you know, thick as thieves as you know, in as comics friends and as work colleagues. And when he passed away, he had probably mentored me to you know, just far enough along for me able to take over where he left off.
Was it awkward filling his shoes under the circumstances?
It's tough. I mean, the biggest thing was the cartoonists. The cartoonists had a relationship with Jay that was, you know, entrenched in, I mean, he was with the company for 18 years, and he developed many of these. I mean, you mentioned Patrick McDonnell and Jerry Scott and Jim Borgman and Rick Kirkman, and these guys were brought to King Features by Jay. You know, he helped develop, you know, Zits, and he helped develop Mutts. And in the case of Baby Blues, for example, you know, that was a strip being done at another syndicate, and he was instrumental in bringing it over to King Features. So these cartoons had relationships with him, and my biggest concern was not that it was awkward, but that, you know, how do I gain the trust of these guys that you know, had this giant protecting them for so long. And fortunately, in my time at King Features before landing in my current job, Jay involved me in every aspect of the business and all the processes, and he had me working with the cartoonists, and I was able to begin to establish my own relationships with these people. And I thank them greatly for it. The cartoonists never said, okay, well, here's the guy who has to somehow replace Jay Kennedy. I think that they said, okay, well, here's Brendan, it's time to start anew, or it's time to continue on with this guy we know, but he just has this new sort of function for us. And they've all been fantastic and gracious. I remember one time, this is an incredibly flattering moment, I can't remember where we were. I want to say it was at the Ohio State Cartoon Research Library. They have a big convention every 3 years. And it was the October after Jay had passed away, and he passed away in March. And I had been in the job for, I guess that would be about 6 months or so. And Mort Walker was there, and he was talking to, I think he was talking to Mike Peters, who does Mother Goose and Grimm. Mort Walker does Beetle Bailey. Yeah.
Mort's been on the show. I forgot about Mort. Go ahead.
There,
I'm sorry.
There you go. I mean, yeah, you've got all of us. And I walked up to them, you know, with a cocktail glass. It was during a cocktail party. I said, hey, how you guys doing? And Mort said, well, we were just talking about you, Brendan. I said, what? Really? I said, I hope it was good things. He goes, well, we've decided that we're very pleased that you're the one who's, you know, taken over the job now that Jay is gone. And I just, like, this blew me away. I just couldn't believe it. It was just the most humbling, you know, experience to hear this from Mort Walker. I mean, he's one of the sort of, you know, the living gods of our business. That kind of solidified the whole thing.
Have you had to make any really difficult decisions relative to some of these legacy artists since you've taken over?
Can you be more specific? I mean, as far as...
Well, have you had to, whether it be the artist or the features, because, of course, a lot of these features, these comics have been going on a long time and have changed from the original creator to, have you had to cut anyone loose, for example, or cut any of the
No, we've had a couple of older cartoonists retire, and we've had a couple pass away, unfortunately, as well. In some cases, they may have been replaced. In some cases, we ended the feature. You know, there's a comic strip that by the time it ended wasn't necessarily an extremely popular comic strip distributed to, you know, thousands of newspapers, called Tumbleweeds by Tom Ryan. And I mean, it was at turns that strip was great. I mean, in the early years of that strip, I've read some collections and they're fantastic. And Tom decided he didn't, you know, really want to do it anymore, and it was, you know, understandable. He was, you know, getting up there, and we decided to end the strip. And no, I mean, it wasn't an easy decision because there were a handful of newspapers that took the strip, and you don't want to lose the business necessarily, but you also want to be respectful of the fact that someone like Tom Ryan, who created that strip and was the only steward of it for its entire existence, you're not going to put a replacement artist on it necessarily in a case like that. But no, I mean, not very many difficult decisions like that. A lot of times the decisions are clear. It's obvious what needs to be done, and maybe I'm just the person who needs to be there to do it. But I think some of these things are bigger than me.
Mm. Well, last question. Among all of the King strips, no one's listening. It's just you and me. Which is your favorite?
Well, I might get in trouble if I don't say that my favorite comic strip is my wife's comic strip.
Oh, which is that?
My wife is Rena Piccolo, who's also in Syncopated. She's the one who did that postcard story. And she has a strip called Tina's Groove about a sort of 30-something single waitress. And it's a great strip, and she's a fantastic cartoonist. And she's also one of the six chicks. There's a feature we do called Six Chicks where there's six different women. They each have their own day of the week. She's the Wednesday chick, and they alternate on Sundays. I think she's a wonderful cartoonist. And frankly, I mean, her strip is great. She's been in The New Yorker. She's in Parade magazine every now and then. She's a great gag writer. She's a good character writer and all around very, very good cartoonist. And she's probably one of my favorite cartoonists.
A wise and shrewd pick.
Yes, yes. But it's like a parent, you know. You don't tell your kids that you love any one of them more than the next. I love them all the same. All the comic strips, I love them all the same. They all have their own attributes and their own readerships that care very much about them, and that's enough for me to care very much about them as well.
Well, folks, you can check out Rena Piccolo's work, Tina's Groove. It's at kingfeatures.com. Just click on comics and follow your way to Tina's Groove. And you can see examples of all the King strips there. Also, you can find Syncopated, we hope, in great bookstores everywhere or online at mrmedia.com, mrmedia.com, amazon.com. Oh, Brendan, are you still maintaining a site of your own?
It's kind of under construction right now. I think if you go there's nothing there.
Okay.
So unfortunately, no. But you know, I should also mention, King Features has a couple of different ways for you to check out comics online, and kingfeatures.com is sort of a great business-to-business site where people can go and, if they want to buy the comics, learn about them, sample them a little bit, and get put in touch with our sales staff. But we, we've been working on this project, Comics Kingdom, which is an embeddable widget, comics reader widget that we sell to online editions of newspapers. And you can go to comicskingdom.com and find the paper closest to you that carries this widget. And they have all of our comics in there. Some of them carry our puzzles through a widget as well. And we also have Daily Ink, which is a subscription service that people can go to and get a full year's archive of every strip that we syndicate, as well as some vintage strips.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Wow. Well, Brendan, it was a pleasure to talk to you today. You're certainly a man with a variety of interests and talents, and I know you're a very young guy too. So I wish you many years of continued practice at all these things. And thanks so much for joining us on Mr. Media today.
Thanks for having me, Bob. It was a pleasure.
All right. Take care of yourself.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. And for more interviews with your favorite comics artists and writers, and we've named several of them here this morning, surf over to our main website, www.mrmedia.com. That's where you can listen to my earlier conversations with Mort Walker, Ray Billingsley, Patrick McDonnell, Jim Borgman, Jerry Scott, Rick Kirkman, and those are just the ones from from King Features. And there's many, many more there. And please think about writing an online review of Mr. Media, casting a vote for Mr. Media, or marking Mr. Media as one of your favorites, whether you listen on Blog Talk Radio, TrueSlant, Pointer Online, MySpace, Facebook, NetVibes, Multiply, Zanga, Friendster, Orkut, Bebo, Podcast Pickle, Vox, Folio, Mediafly, PageFlix, Podfeed.net, Blueberry, Eons, Mihente, Zencast, Zimbio, or Odeo. And subscribe to Mr. Media in iTunes, and you'll never miss a show. Just search Mr. Media Interviews within the podcast section of iTunes and click the free subscribe button. It's that easy. You can also listen with a piece of string and a tin can in many locations. If you've got an idea for a guest, email me directly at bob@andelman.com. That's A-N-D-E-L-M-A-N. You can also follow me on Facebook or on Twitter, www.twitter.com/andelman. Thanks so much for joining us today. Always appreciate when you give a piece of your day and spend it with us. Thanks for listening, everybody.